Morning. Many of us missed all the voices today who are mostly at home, not feeling well. But we pressed on through all the singing without all those voices that were missing. And that really is the theme of this year. The elders decided, at my suggestion, that our theme this year be pressing on. And I did talk about this a few months back. I think it might have been one of the first lessons I did after I preached after Julie had passed, because I had thought a lot about that, you know, during her passing away, realizing that, you know, life will continue for me until I can join her again. But and I got hit with there was a song in there that we sang at her memorial, which I didn't really recognize till we were singing in the middle of it, and then I was like, "Oh, that's why I'm tearing up." But you just keep pressing on because that's what life is. It's kind of our theme for this year, and I think it's apropos for the last couple of years around the world. Everybody life got thrown in turmoil for many all over the planet. You know, in America, we have, you know, complained a lot about it, but there's no country that has not been affected. Some more than others. Some changed the lives of their citizens dramatically. Some didn't. But everybody's was affected in some way, and I think all of us probably recognized how much we are filled with traditions, how much we are filled with the things that we like to do. And I don't know if you remember in 20, you know, we couldn't gather for, big Thanksgiving, especially in our group, which a lot of us were used to doing, you know, 30 or so people couldn't do that. You know, a lot of traditions changed and it affected us. But the truth is, that's what happens with life. Things happen, they change, it causes a shift, but then we try to get back to kind of doing things, connecting with people in similar and common ways, because we're drawn to that. We want to see the same people. We want to see our family. We want to see our friends. We want to be with people that we love and we care about. And when those things get shifted, we are affected by that. And that's normal, and it is part of life. And the truth about this verse, which I want to thank Jennifer for putting these together for us. So we put one up here, one where Mike's standing in the foyer there, about pressing on from Philippians 3:14. I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Paul himself wrote that. And we're going to look at the whole passage here in a little bit. But he talked about, and we're going to look at some other passages, this idea of that we are, our life is essentially running or walking a race. There is a start to it and there is a finish to it. And the start is really when we are born into this world, and the finish is when our spirit leaves our flesh and it goes to be with God. And so until that goal, the finish line, we won't receive the prize. We won't get that upward call that God has promised us. And so until that happens, until we've given our last breath, we don't give up. That's what Paul's talking about. We don't go, well, that's it. I'm done. I can't handle anymore. Now, we are all tempted to do that from time to time. We probably have had jobs. We've had relationships where we just feel like we can't take it anymore. And I need to change. I got to do something different. I can't. This isn't working. And we all get to points like that in life. And Paul is trying to help us see that we might need to assess what all has happened before so that we can then lay it aside and press on. Yesterday, a few of us, I had a couple of people at my house, but I know a few other people probably watched football yesterday. One of the biggest things about playing football, and I played back, since I was a kid up into high school, and the biggest thing about football, and a lot of sports are the same way, is regardless of whether you really messed up or you did a, had a great play, you have to forget it. You've got to set it aside, and you have got to focus on what the next play is. Because if you get caught up in what just happened, whether you're, and I've seen this in sports, where somebody's rejoicing and forgets to go do the next play. or somebody's so caught up in having blown it that they're not remembering what they're supposed to do next. And we do that in life. Paul talks about that in different places, and I have other lessons where I've done talked about that, where we have to lay aside the past. And I mean whether that's good or bad to keep going. Because sometimes, we call it resting on our laurels, which is a reference to the ancient Greek games, if you didn't know. Resting on our laurels is a reference to their gold medal, which was a laurel wreath, which, by the way, is the crown of victory in Scripture, by the way. And that laurel wreath, what they put on their heads, you could rest on that. And you could just go, look, hey, look what I've done. And now you could get paid, and supported all of your life because of what you had done in winning a race. But then it can stop you from keep going and keep moving on and keep doing things that are productive and helpful. And so, or you can get so caught up in what has happened in the past, and so your thoughts and heart and meditations are so focused on things that have happened in the past as a failure or bad that you feel like you can't keep going. And that's all understandable. Everybody's going to feel those things. As long as you live long enough in this life, you're going to feel those sensations. And that's why I think this theme is so important, especially at this time, is regardless of what has happened, whether it's the pandemic or something else, because for me, it really isn't the pandemic. For most of the pandemic, I was caring for Julie. And the pandemic, it didn't affect me at all. I was still in the house 24/7 for most of last year, or at least the first half of last year, caring for her. And that wouldn't have changed regardless of circumstances. So the pandemic, this is not a much big deal to me. I actually had, COVID in 20 now. Forget all the different years. But I didn't have it bad, fortunately. But that was also the same exact week we found out her cancer was back. So I really didn't care about my COVID, right? My wife had cancer, and it most likely she only had like a year, which is around what she had. And so those things didn't matter. But I'm trying to press on from having lost my wife and to keep going. And so none of us want to lose, a spouse, especially in our 50s, but things happen. They happen to everybody. It's nothing, unusual to me. It happens to lots of different people. And it can happen in different ways for you. Some people lost jobs. Some people lost, they lost family members. They lost children. They lost parents. They lost spouses. A lot of these things happened. Sometimes from COVID. We almost lost a couple people in our group a few months back, right? We were in that point where we thought we had a couple of them. And now, a few months later, fortunately, Katie, had a new baby born that everybody was worried about. But, so life goes on. It presses on. It keeps going. And it will do that for all of us until we're ready, as the old saying goes, to give up the ghost, which is, the old scripture, the old King James used to talk about, instead of the spirit, it talked about the ghost. And so, to give up your spirit. And so that idea, until that comes, a mindset and I think this requires an emotional toughness that God is really trying to get all of his followers to see, to become overcomers. Like he talked about in all of the letters to the seven churches of Asia in Revelation 2 and 3, that they, in order to receive those crowns, in order to receive those rewards, he talked about being an overcomer. If you conquer, if you overcome all the things of this world, all the temptations, all of the trials, all of the difficulties, and remain faithful, then I will give you all of this reward. And that's what our giving up the ghost is. It's not our loss. It's our victory. It is our finishing the goal to receive the crown. And so let's talk about that here a little bit more. And I actually talked about this, I said, maybe four. And so just to remind us a little bit about some of those things, I do have, you know, another passage I'm going to kind of add to it. But forgetting what lies behind and straining forward. And in Philippians 3, and I want to read all of these verses from verse 8 on to 15. He says, "Indeed, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord." That is a statement. And we might call it almost his thesis statement. He's like, all of his, what he's talked about before and after is about this point. I count everything, it's all a loss in comparison to knowing Jesus. That's the victory that Paul's talking about. And he says, "For his sake I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish." And so he talks about, I've suffered the loss of all things. Now, there's a really good chance we can go into Paul's life. We could look at some of the evidences that Paul comes from a wealthy family, raised up, pretty privileged, raised up with great authority and power. And we see that him being used by the opponents of Christianity in the early years. And if he wasn't anybody, I don't know how he would have risen to such a high place. But he was somebody who had been trained for leadership and in the whole nation, raised and trained in Jerusalem. And so he suffered all of that. And at this point, he's sometimes a prisoner. He's often, you know, neglected. He often doesn't necessarily know where he's going to, you know, lay his head. Doesn't have riches. Needs to, even as he's preaching the gospel, going to travel around, he still often had to work to pay for, to get food so he could eat. And so, in spite of all of that, he said, I've suffered all this stuff. But it was all trash anyway. Because all that stuff was rubbish. It's like, it's stuff that belongs in the trash can. Especially in comparison to knowing Christ. And that's what he's telling us. He says, and all of that happened in order that he may gain Christ and be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law. He goes, I don't want to be considered righteous because I did all the right things and look how good I am. He says, I want to be righteous because I know Jesus. And that's where my righteousness comes from. He says, but that which comes through faith in Christ, the righteousness from God that depends on faith, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and may share his sufferings, becoming like him in his death. I mean, in a sense, Paul even talked about that, rejoicing in the sufferings that you got to do with Christ, especially earlier in the book. He talks about that being counted worthy. Even the apostles did that the first time they were really persecuted. Or they were beaten. They left after being jailed and beaten, rejoicing because they were counted worthy to suffer for him. They understood he had to suffer. They understood their suffering. And sometimes we need to understand that a life that is based around Christ is going to have suffering that people in the world don't have. They're going to forget about it, and they're just going to go try to be happy. And we're going to suffer and endure things that we might enjoy, but we're going to do that so that we can walk with Christ. But the goal of that, the reward of that is so great that all that stuff I'm giving up is rubbish anyway. That's the point Paul's making. And making to all of us. He talked about, and he's talking about it from his own perspective in his own life. And so he goes on and he says, becoming like him in his death, that by any means possible I may attain the resurrection of the dead. And so the point of all of this is, and this is really the point of pressing on, is there's only one thing that matters to me. One thing is the most important. I want to see him in the resurrection. Everything else is a sidelight. It takes away the focus of what's important. And so he says, not that I have already obtained this. He's saying, listen, I'm not already there. And he says, or I'm already perfect. I'm not complete. And we look at Paul at the time he was writing this. By the way, as he's writing this letter, he is a prisoner. And we look at him and go, you know, most of us would struggle to think we would attain to where Paul was at when he wrote this. We go, I'm not sure in my lifetime I'm going to attain to the level of completeness or, you know, righteousness or godliness that Paul had attained at this point. And yet Paul was saying, I'm not perfected yet, which essentially means to be finished or completed. It doesn't have the idea that we use. We often talk about, oh, I'm not perfect. We mean that means I don't sin. That's really not a biblical, that's not very biblical, by the way. The Bible doesn't use the term that way. The concept of perfect in the Bible isn't about whether you sin or not sin. It's whether you're complete, whether you're mature, finished or not. Whether you've completed it. And so he says, I'm not complete. I haven't done that. He says, but I press on to make it my own because Christ Jesus has made me his own. So he did all that he did so that I could be his. So I have to keep going until I reach that goal, the resurrection of the dead. And he says, brothers, I do not consider that I have made it my own. So he's going, listen, I press on to make it my own. He says, I haven't made it my own yet. I'm not there. I keep going because I haven't crossed. By the way, in 2 Timothy, he tells us, I'm done. He was about to be executed when he wrote it, or at least in the near future. And he says, I have finished my race. So even before he actually died, he knew he was done. He goes, I've done all that I'm going to do. I'm sitting in jail, and not the kind of jail he was here, which he was probably in a rented house, even under house arrest. At that point, he was probably sitting in a dungeon, being ready to be executed by the Roman soldiers. And, you know, he didn't have a coat. He was cold, and he's asked Timothy to bring him a coat. But at this point, he goes, I'm not done yet. In 2 Timothy, he knew he was done. His race was over. He probably had already had the sentence. They were just waiting to probably, you know, complete it. And he goes, you know, he goes, I haven't reached it yet. And I don't, he says, I consider this. So I consider that I haven't yet made it, but one thing I do, and this theme is all about that one thing that we must do to reach the goal. And he says, I press on toward the goal for the prize. So he said, remember he's saying, I want to attain the resurrection of the dead. That is the prize. I want to be raised with him in eternity. But the goal, the finish line, is my death. And he says, so until that happens, I'm going to keep doing. And I'm going to keep working. And I'm going to keep living for him. And so he says, I press toward the goal. Why do you press toward the goal, the finish line? Why do you want to cross the tape? Not just so you can say cross the tape, because the idea of crossing the tape, who gets to cross the tape? the winner. Because the tape is down for the rest of them. But you and I are not racing against other people in this race. We are racing against ourselves. We have part of us that doesn't want to run. With that old man of sin that we have to put off every day. That doesn't want to run. I don't want to do that. I want to do what I want to do. I want to eat what I want to eat. I want to drink what I want to drink. I want to have, you know, whatever things I enjoy. I want to do those things. That's all in all of us. And our flesh wants all that. But he says, no, but my will says no. What's really important is I want to cross that tape. My death being faithful. And he says, so I press on toward the goal for the prize. So I want to cross the tape so I can get the reward. That's the prize. And the prize is that upward call, that resurrection. All that talk, it's all the same idea. It's all about me being with God. That's the point. That's what he wanted above everything else. Nothing else mattered. And that's what he's trying to get us to see. And hopefully throughout this year, hopefully we can just keep remembering that. Regardless of what has happened, regardless of what has taken place, no matter what has happened before, I can't do anything about what has taken place, but I can do something about the rest of today, and I can do something about tomorrow. Whatever time I have, I can do something with it. And what am I going to do with it? And so he says, let those of us who are mature think this way. And if anything you think, if in anything you think otherwise, God will reveal that also to you. Only let us hold true to what we have attained. So don't give up where you're at. Keep pressing on. Keep growing. Keep learning. It is often very tempting to sometimes, well, you know, I've done enough. I'm kind of finished. And no, you have more to do. It may not be doing the same things you were doing before, but you have more to do. You have more to offer. Older people will often say, the younger people don't want to listen to me. Younger people will say, you know, well, I don't get included because, you know, I'm not old enough yet. And you got that little window in between of, you know, 30 to 40, where they all think, you know, everything's on them. They get to heap all the weight, maybe 30 to 50. They get all of the pressure from above and from below. But all of us have something to offer, and we want to keep doing that, pressing on. I talked about it after Julie's passing that I didn't like the idea of the word moving on, because moving on seems like I don't want to think about something. I want to set that aside. I don't want to think about it anymore, and I'm going to go do something else. And so I talked pressing on. I'm going to keep going. I'm never going to forget. And that's not exactly what he's talking about here. And that's one of the reasons I kind of brought this part up. He doesn't mean here, by the way, forgetting people, life, experiences, and those things. That's not what he's talking about. God doesn't expect us to forget all of our experiences, all of the people, all the things we've learned. No, he expects us to retain all of that, but then set it aside. Don't focus on it so I can focus on where am I going. One of the great picture images I have in my head of this concept is when I was learning to drive. I'd already been driving for a fairly long time because I started driving at like 13. And my dad's and a lot of his equipment and trucks and things, not on the streets, so I was still legal. But so I was learning to drive in the streets, and I was I had a private driving training, and we were driving through some canyons. We had to drive over this really narrow bridge, and as we were driving over this narrow bridge. And it was one of those kind of like over a river, through this in this canyon, and you know, it had those old metal side rails on it, right next to the road, right? Not there's no walkway or anything, none of that. And a semi is coming the other way across the bridge. And you know, it looked really tiny. that lane. I mean, it's like, okay, that, because he's like right next to the curb, right next to the railing, and right next to the center. And I'm like, and so my car easily can fit. And you kind of coming up. So he gave me this, and he goes, don't look at the truck. Don't look at the railing. Your chances, if you look at those things, your chances are you will drive at those things. Because that's actually what your body does. It's why, have you ever noticed when you're driving down the road and some car is kind of like moving a little bit, you can kind of tell they want to get in front of you in the lane. And usually that happens because they move their head this way. Because as soon as you move your head this way, your hands move a little. And the car moves a little. You have to actually compensate and try to overcompensate if you don't want that to happen. Because it's natural. And so he said, you have to stare. I don't want you to look at the actual bridge. You need to look at the center of the lane on the other side of that bridge. And you need to drive towards that. And I did. I just kind of like, you're going, wow, this feels pretty tight. But I just focused the car on hitting the center of the lane on the other side of the bridge. And we went through. Right? Because he didn't want me to stop. You know, being real scared, you might sometimes. I wasn't really scared, but I was a little bit like, oh, okay. That's probably the first time I had been in that tight of a situation. And I never forgot it. It was like, yeah, that's great advice. I think it's great advice for life. Because very often we get in situations, we don't really know what, you know, we start looking around. And it's a little like, you know, I think Peter, when he starts walking on the water, you know, when he's looking at Jesus, he starts walking on the water and he says, yeah, come on out to me. And what does he do? He's looking at Jesus, he's walking, and then he looks around and he goes, I'm walking on water. And pretty soon he wasn't walking on water anymore. We are the same way. We have to look where we're going, not where we've been. We glance at it, right? Rearview mirror. But Mark 8, 18 to 21, you know, Jesus himself said, having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember when I broke the five loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? They said 12. And the seven for the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? And they said 7. And he said to them, do you not understand? And so he had told them to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. And they began discussing with one another the fact that they had no bread. And so he's like, don't you guys remember what happened? Bread's not that important. I can conjure up bread from nothing. I can just make it expand. The bread isn't important here. And they didn't get it. After seeing all that and experiencing all that, and they were sitting there thinking, boy, we blew it. We forgot to bring food for all of us to eat. And, you know, this is another one of those places where I see a little bit of frustration in Jesus with his own disciples, his own apostles, which I think makes him extremely human. We see that humanness in him. It's like, oh, man, don't you guys get this? James 1 also, you know, James talked about, he says, be doers of the word, not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. If anyone is a hearer of the word, not a doer, he's like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror, for he looks at himself and goes away and at once forgets what he was like. Well, would we want to do that? I have threatened for like 2 decades now to someday show up preaching about this lesson, looking exactly the way I did when I wake up. I never have done it because I've never had the courage. And so you could ask Janae sometime, especially when my hair is a little longer, how crazy my hair is in the morning. And, but I, you know, like, because I just want that example. It would be a real it would be a moment that you would probably never forget. But it would be, because I look at myself in the mirror, and I was like, oh, man. You're supposed to wake up feeling refreshed, right? Why do I look so much worse? And yet, if I walked away from that mirror and I went out of the house looking exactly that way, people would be going, do you not have a mirror? Do you forget what you look like in that mirror? No, we shouldn't forget what has happened. We shouldn't forget people. We shouldn't forget the learning or the experiences. But sometimes even those we have to set aside. You have to, you know, even with me, and I think about Julie a lot. I kind of talk to her. And in many ways, I kind of hear, having, you know, just known each other so well, I hear her what her advice to me would be. I know kind of things she would say to me. So I talk and she goes, and I hear, and it's obviously in my brain, but I'm hearing her kind of, you know, saying stuff. Because it's probably the same kind of stuff I've heard before. And so, but at times you have to forget that and you've got to keep going. And there's a time for those things. Now, and the last one here, and just kind of point this out of this part. Laying aside the past, good or bad, which I already talked about, which we can't change. That's the biggest thing. Sometimes we focus on the bad because we are so caught up in our guilt over what bad we've done or failures or sin that we fail to keep going. It stalls us. And you need to confess it. You need to ask God to forgive that. And you need to move on, because that's exactly what God's asking of you. To cast it to him and keep going and keep practicing righteousness. And he said, but then we have to refocus on what's the goal for which he gave his life. And the goal is our eternal glory with him. He wants to raise us up with him, to live with him, to sit on the throne with him, all the different passages talk about. And then finally, keep running. And using the analogy of Hebrews 12, he says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, which is all the people of faith that he mentioned in chapter 11. And he says, we're surrounded by all of these martyrs. That's actually the word he uses there. And he says, we're surrounded by all these martyrs who lived their life, and almost everybody he mentions, most of the people he mentioned were killed for their faith or died because of their faith. And he says, and that's the idea of kind of what it means to be a martyr. He says, let us also lay aside every weight. And this idea of laying aside every weight, I think, is the exact same thing that Paul's talking about in Philippians 3 there, is that we have to sometimes forget the past to keep going. I think this is the same idea. Sometimes, if you're going to run a race, you often come out, you might have shorts on, you might have a thin top on, they're usually really light, right? You have lightweight running shoes, and then you often, before you actually run, you're usually a little warmed up, and you have sweats on. So you, because if you get warmed up and then you stand around before the race, what happens? Your muscles get cold and all your muscles get tight and you're not ready to run. And so you have the warm-ups on, you have the coats on. I don't know if you've ever been, I pitched for a long time in baseball. I had to wear a coat. You know, baseball is played in the summer, the boys of summer. Why do you have to wear a coat? Well, your arm doesn't get cold. So, and a lot of times what happens, you don't put a whole coat on unless it's, you know, fall. You just put the sleeve on because I don't want to wear a coat when it's 90 degrees. But you kept putting that coat on that arm so it wouldn't get cold when you weren't throwing. And that's the idea. Sometimes we have to lay aside those things, but you have to take it off to go out and throw. And we, all of us, are the same way. We have to take whatever has happened, whatever's going on. We sometimes have to set it aside to figure out what can we do. How can we keep running? And then he also talks about and the sin which clings so closely. Those are two different things. Sometimes we have to lay aside stuff, things, jobs, relationships, all kinds of stuff can hinder us from running. And it won't be the same for all of us. It won't even be the same for a married couple, necessarily. But we have to lay it aside so we can keep going. And he says, so lay aside all the weight, lay aside the sin which clings so close, and let us run with endurance the races set before us. Now, I don't know if people have run races. I didn't run races. I did swim races at a point in my life. And you cannot, I'll use running just so a little more common for everybody. You can't run, you know, a 1,000-meter race like you would run a 100-meter race. Right? One, you're going to go almost all out for the whole, all of it. And the other, if you do that, you'll be last. You have to run with endurance. You have to run at a pace that's fast enough to win, but slow enough that you can maintain your endurance. And so if you've been in any races, how many of you have been in races before? Might have been a race for the cure or something like that. How many of you have walked during it? Most of you should probably, you know, put a hand up in some way. Because at some point in a race, especially if it's a long endurance race, you're going to have a chance where you might just have to walk. Because that's just, you need to kind of catch your wind, you need to catch your breath, you need to keep moving. So you're running, or maybe you kept running, but have you ever had that run where you were running about the exact same speed you can walk? So I know that for me, that's right about a 15-minute mile. I can walk it and run it at the exact same pace. I know that for my treadmill. So I can jog on it, or I can walk it. And it's the exact same pace. But either way, you know, you have to keep going. And sometimes you have to slow down a little to catch your breath. But you keep going. And that's what he's talking about. You've got to run it with endurance. And run the race that is set before us. We look to Jesus because he's the author and finisher, founder and perfecter of our faith, as ESV puts it, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despised the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. Hey, look at all that he went through. You can do this. You can overcome like the martyrs in chapter 11. You can overcome like Jesus because he's helping us. He didn't leave us alone to do this on our own. We can't do it by our strength. We do it by his. And so, and this is the last part I want to kind of hit to this morning. And that is, we do this for each other. Maybe I should put that with each other. This isn't a race we run alone. It's a race we run with others. And in Ephesians chapter 4, starting verse 17, it is now, this I say and I testify in the Lord that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. So don't walk like them. So in this imagery, he's talking about walking rather than running. But he says, I don't want you to walk like they do. Their minds are darkened. They're on things that don't matter. They're focused on all of that rubbish and trash that Paul talked about another place. He says, their understanding is darkened. They're alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance. The concept of ignorance is not just, I don't know, is I don't want to know. It's like, I could, but I don't really care. That's what this really means. And so when he says, and that's due to their hardness of heart. It's like, I don't want to follow that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to really search for God or learn about God, because then what would happen? As I talked about last couple months, then I become responsible for doing something about it. If I search and find God, well, then I got to do something with that. And if, so if I pretend that I don't know and I don't search, then I feel guiltless, or at least those in the world. And so he says, so he kind of, and he moves on, and I want to just come down a little bit. So he said, assuming in verse 21 that you have heard about him or taught in him as the truth is in Jesus, to put off your old self, which belongs to your former manner of life and is corrupt through deceitful desires, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds, and to put on the new self created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. We have learned Christ in this way. Put off that old man, put on the new. And therefore, having put away falsehood, and this really section is kind of the focus. Notice, he says, therefore putting away falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor. For, because we are members one of another. We are not isolated people that don't affect other people. We need to speak truth, not just for our own sake, but for our other members' sake. And he says, so going all the way through there, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and give no opportunity to the devil. Well, what's the opportunity to the devil? What happens? What is the danger of me getting angry? But usually our real problem with anger is what we do to others when we're angry. The impact and the effect we have on other people when we get angry. And that's why we have to deal with it and try to deal with it in a way that we don't sin. Because anger by itself is not sin. But often it is a motivation for sin. And sometimes that anger can even be a righteous anger. How many times have you been upset with somebody who did something really wrong? And then you went and did something wrong. Out of that same anger. Because anger in us is unlike anger in God. Anger in God, his wrath is righteous. Anger in man does not produce the righteousness of God. By the way, that's in James. And he says, don't give an opportunity to the devil to cause all that problems. He said, let the thief steal no longer, but rather let him labor. So you think, okay, don't steal. You should work for what you have. And you could stop there, but notice he doesn't. He says, doing honest work with his own hands, that he may have something to share with anyone in need. The point of working isn't just to take care of yourselves, but also to help others. That the point of us running this race is about others, not about me. And that's the real hard part sometimes. Especially when we're struggling, especially when we have difficulties, especially when we're all cocooning because of, you know, whatever fears we have or whatever trials we have. And then we stop focusing on others and we start focusing on ourselves. And our vision no longer is down the other side of that bridge. We're looking at the rails. And I don't know if you ever had that happen to you. Did you ever look at something and drive into it? That happened to me. I was learning to ride a bike. And right before school one time, I didn't end up going to school on this day, so it was that kind of a bad accident. I'm learning to ride a bike. I ride around the block. I get all the way around the block. And I see a car on the other side of the street parked. And for whatever reason, I focused on it. And I didn't have to come within 20 feet of it. And I ran into it. My bike went under the back, and this is an old car that had a solid steel bumper. My bike went under, and my face hit the corner of the and I did not go to school. My eye swelled shut, could not see out of it, probably had a concussion. It wasn't pretty. All because I couldn't take my eyes off the thing I was supposed to avoid. Because I wasn't looking where I was going, I was looking at the thing I didn't want to do, and I ran right into it. Kind of an example for life. So, anyway, for all of us, I want you to keep running. And if you need any help in that, I want you to reach out. I want you to reach out to me, reach out to other elders, reach out to members here. Call us, text us, email us, anything. If we can help you in this race in any way, help you run with Jesus, help you know more about Jesus, help you understand more about his word that you might overcome ignorance of his teachings, we would be happy to do any of those things. So we're going to sing a song, Higher on the Mountain. And as we turn to face that hillside, reaching to that sunlight that he's talking about, and keep going. This is all we're trying to keep running that race to go to that mountain. And if you need something, please reach out to us. You can come forward and let us know if you need it.